Hey, guys.
Hey, Phil.
Hello.
Tasso? April?
Phil? Yep.
Tammy?
Yeah.
Is that it? Patrick? All right. I'm sure more will be joining us. Anything new with anybody?
just the same old stuff?
I'm
working.
What's that?
We're all tired from working.
Really? Is that how it should be?
No, it shouldn't, but it's been good. It's all good in the hood, man.
Well, tell me, what's good? What's going on? That's good.
Well, I've launched a 6-week program and charged $1,799 for it.
$1,799?
Yes.
And what does it include?
It's 6 weeks of one-on-one once a week with me. I'm doing a little course with it, educating.
In a group?
A group, yeah. And I got eight in it.
Good. Good.
So now I'm going to expand it to the 10-week package, because I was already talking about a 6-week program when we started to talk about that. So I just tried to pair it up, say if I got to charge $2,900 for 10 weeks, let me just charge $1,799 for this.
Okay, but you have eight people paying $1,800 each for a 6-week program?
Yeah.
That's got to feel great.
Yeah. I mean, I was telling Tammy, it's been, I haven't dropped any of my clients, and I picked up these six, and it's just, it's working my ass off, but hey, bills are paid, there's money in the bank, and you can see the future. And you
just explain to me, Tasso, because I'm glad. I'm not surprised. I'm glad. But why the working your ass off part? Like, why is that? Why is it so much work?
Well, that's not the work itself, though. I have so many irons in the fire at one time, and I'm trying to get those irons out of the fire.
Okay.
So it's a matter of, when we talk about going through and understanding what you want and what you want to be. And, between juggling around what's to occur with this building and dealing with that, dealing with my involvement in youth ministry, dealing with the involvement I have in the church, dealing with the involvement in training some teams here, all those things during the summer just come, they've all just sort of been the perfect storm this year. We've had great response on all of them. I actually have more help than I probably ever had. It's been one of our best summers probably.
So it's not because of the program that you're that busy?
No, it's because of all the other ancillary things. You go into the summer, you say, man, I got to have all these irons in the fire. And then we added the other iron in the fire, which is a 6-week program. And because that's such a success, all the things seem to be a spillover to those other things. People that couldn't afford the $17.99 program, well, they went into one of our normal summer memberships, which was $9.99, kind of thing. So
do you feel that you knew this all along and that you could have created this program probably years ago and charged this much?
Yeah.
And this is where I've been kind of digging and pushing and exploring is what was the thing that was holding everybody back? Because now I see Jason is doing it, and I see finally Jim is doing it, and now you're doing it. It's great. I love this. And there was some sort of blockage. And I spent a lot of time kind of planning how, over the course of this year, I'm going to just push you guys forward to do what you're capable of. So it's nice to see. But I do want you to see that. I want you to see that you really had the ability to do this a very long time ago, but there was something that's holding you back. And that something is holding you back now. And that doesn't mean don't pat yourself on the back and love what you've done, but just realize that there was nothing real. But there was something. There was nothing tangible. It wasn't like somebody had their foot on your foot and wasn't letting you move. But there was something that was holding you back. And what I'm saying to you is that something has moved, but it's still there. It's still holding you back from what you're capable of. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So it's progress, and it's great progress, but I want to take it beyond. Tell me what's happening with you. I'm going to come back to you, Tasso, because we have just – it's the three of you, so I'm going to deal with you a lot here today. So, Tammy, what's going on with you?
I'm actually working on the assignment you gave us last time. And same thing, putting programs together. I think the only thing that's really held me back, like, is more like what you said at the one point, is just getting the being in the learning part of it and not feeling that I can charge, you know, a higher rate than I was charging, for, and if, you know, because I wasn't delivering, I didn't feel like what I was delivering was worth the value. But what I did, since I don't know how many calls ago it was, when we talked about charging more, is I just started trying to more small groups so that I get my $200 an hour. And so doing, you know, three people for 30 minutes instead of doing one person 30 minutes. And that way it was a way for me to bump it up right now until I, while I'm putting together my programs. Because I'd like to do what Tasha's doing too. And like you said, having a beginning and an end and charge. And I know I can do that. It's right now I'm bogged down in the studio. And then trying to get Billy, he's coming in. He's on his last essay for his certification.
Listen, even if Billy doesn't come in, Tammy, take that out of the equation because it has nothing to do with it, honestly. It has nothing to do with it.
Right.
The rational lies that you tell yourself will always justify why it hasn't happened yet.
No, it's
the rational lies that you tell yourself will always justify why it hasn't happened yet. So if you kind of believe your own lies, they don't feel like lies. It feels rational,
right?
Right. So
it is the truth. It's what I'm working on it, and I do. I'm going. That's what I'm doing. We're rebranding the Wellness Matter. So I'm in the middle of that. So, you know, what I'm saying about him coming on will give. You know, I can funnel some people over there to free up some of my time, so I can run some of these programs. Right now, you know, I'm training a lot of people. I'm in the studio a lot. So I
understand. And you could really believe this for now, but I'm just telling you, you don't need Billy or anyone to free up your time. You don't. And we will think that I'm going to bring this up again probably 3 months from now. I'm going to go, remember we had that conversation? Because you're in it right now. You know, it's hard because this is what you know. And you're busy in the studio and you really are busy. You can't go, no, Phil, I'm really busy. You don't understand. I do understand, but I also understand everything that you do is because of a choice you made. Every single thing that you do. So when you find yourself busy and you create another way to say, well, I can't do the whole thing now, but I'm going to do a part of it. So instead of doing the one-on-ones charging my value, I'm going to do a group, so at least I'm getting paid for my time. You're moving forward, but you're holding on to those same rational lies. And if you don't, you know, if you don't agree with me now, that's okay. I'm going to say it anyway. But we will go forward and look back to this, and I have a feeling you're going to go, I do know what you meant. I really do know what you meant. April, anything you want to share? April?
Sorry, I'm on mute. I have people upstairs doing the floors, sanding the floors down. No, I'm just doing my training, and I want to do the 16-hour thing that you've been talking about to try to get some clarity and figure out what I'm doing next.
Okay, so with this 16-hour thing, here's what I want you to think about today, because after today, we'll move on it. Who are you going to do this with? And I'm going to say to you, I really believe that everyone in this group, and even if you're listening to the recording now, you know, Jason, Patrick, Coach Terry, you know, all you guys, will benefit from having a coach. And I know there's a part of you that's going to go, no, I'll just discipline myself, I'll just do it. But you would really benefit from having a coach, not just for an accountability standpoint, but somebody who will ask you the question so you speak the answers out loud and you literally hear what you're saying because you're going to catch yourself. So when I talk about 16 hours, you know, it's a real commitment, and it's you can easily go, I can't find 16 hours, but if it's really 16 hours, it will change your life. Give it some serious thought, and what I would like is, between this call and the next one, on the board, you tell me who you're partnering with, and it doesn't have to be someone in the group. It can be someone in your life. It can be an old friend. It can be somebody, you know, from a different business. But I do think you need some sort of a coach in this to really move you forward because it's real. What I'm asking you to do is real. This is not just a frivolous, let's try something. So it is, in essence, pulling apart every piece of who you are and what you do for a living and putting it back together better. So it'll be easy to go, I did it, and this is what I decided. It's different if somebody else is asking you the hard questions. Through this process and through everything that I do in terms of education, I've learned to use metaphors. And we all use metaphors because we realize they help us communicate. And there's a very good reason for why metaphors help us. So can somebody give me an example of a metaphor you often use when you're teaching or, you know, sharing something with a client? Just some kind of metaphor, you know, where you go, well, your metabolism is like a car, and if you put in premium fuel, you know, we all use metaphors like that. Can anybody just share one? Kind of like throwing logs on the fire. Nobody can think of one off the top of your head? Go ahead.
So I think the most common metaphor I use to explain to people about our particular training philosophy is that we don't do sets. You know, we train high intensity to failure. And the reason we don't go back and do other sets once we've accomplished that is say, look, if there's a piece of dynamite and you put it underneath a wall, the foundation of a wall, and you run a little a fuse back to a plunger and you sit there and you push the plunger down, it sends a stimulus to the dynamite, and the dynamite explodes as a response, and the result you get is you blew out the wall. Does it do any good to stay there and continue to plunge on the plunger once the dynamite has been ignited? And that's
okay.
Why I teach them to look at how we want to teach them to train at a high enough intensity level that one set of that particular part of their workout is appropriate for them.
Good. Now, any reason that you think that resonates more than just sharing the fact of why they shouldn't do conventional sets and reps? Like, why can't you just give them the theory, you know, out of your school of exercise science? Why is it important to use a dynamite metaphor?
Well, I sort of cover it when I do my first orientation with them, sort of the science of it, and I think they're so taken in awe by everything that's going on differently against convention, like with we've talked about the burst training and that I think they're sort of caught up, and it sort of goes in one ear and out the other. So this helps anchor it because it's a story they can remember. It brings it
There's
down.
More to it. That's good. And there's more to it. It's not so much in one ear and out the other, which in itself is a metaphor, right?
Right.
It's more like it's not going in the ear. It's not that it goes in one ear and comes out the other ear. It's that it doesn't go in the ear. Why? Because people have false beliefs. They have blockages. So between the EEM and the amygdala, they are blocking signals. The subconscious mind is deciding this is not true, this is not important. So when somebody who is doing an hour a day of aerobic exercise is being faced with a trainer saying you shouldn't do all that aerobic exercise, it doesn't even go in because the false belief knows. The false belief, it's a false belief, but it knows that they need to do a lot of aerobic exercise. So as long as you hit that false belief, it's not letting anything else in. But now you throw in something about dynamite in a wall, that comes in because you don't have any false beliefs related to the dynamite in the wall. And then once it's in there, now you could change the false belief because they'll go, yeah, that I understand. And that's the reason that metaphors are really valuable in education. So when we talk about, you know, the triangles, even the triangle of the, you call it the synergy triangle. It's a metaphor, right? It's not really a triangle. It's just it's three elements that we want to teach people. But when we give them a triangle, number one, there's closure. So it's kind of like the brain accepts completion. It's not like here's another thing and another thing and another thing. The triangle is closed. Like once you hit that third point, boom, it's done. You have a complete triangle. In addition, the memory is really good at retaining things in threes. We cluster things in threes. We say A, B, C. We just naturally do that, 1, 2, 3. Do, re, mi. And we could learn more than that, but it's easy for our brain to relate to three. So a triangle is a really good tool for using a learning metaphor. We like to think our brain is capable of understanding completeness. So if we talk about a circle, our brain will understand that. If we talk about a triangle, our brain will understand that. If we talk about a rectangle, because it relates to those as closed shapes. So that is a metaphor for completion. Your brain's going, I got the whole thing. I got the whole picture. Even though they don't, it gets in there, and they accept it with confidence. I have found tremendous value in communicating by using the language of the thoroughbred, the phoenix, and the chrysalis. I mean, I've never had anybody get offended by it or not relate to it. You know, when I'm sharing this, heads nod. They know exactly which one they are. So I'm going to ask you guys, what is a metaphor for justice? If we think in terms of getting what is right, I'll share something that just from today. My mom, and many of you have met my mother, many people in the group have because my parents have come to many of our events. And my mom is, she says she's 39 years old, but I think she's really just a little short of 80. And she's never had an accident. And one day, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, she was sitting at a light at Palmetto Park Boulevard in Boca Raton, and the light changed, and she just took her foot off the brake. She didn't even make it onto the gas, so the car started rolling forward. And zooming down Palmetto Park Boulevard is a guy on a motorcycle, right into the front end of her car. He flies off the bike, goes flying in the air. Thankfully, he's alive. The bike continues to go down the street. Thankfully, nobody gets hurt. So the guy goes off the bike, did some serious damage to my mom's car, but she runs out, runs over to the guy, and he's sitting. He's sitting on the ground. He has a helmet on, and he's conscious, but he's not responsive. He's not talking to her. He's kind of dazed. And, you know, people come running around, and the cops come over, and my mother's number one concern was, is he okay? Is he okay? So they take him away in an ambulance, and she's calling the hospital, and then my sister, who's a nurse, knew somebody in the hospital and found out he's okay. He has some damage to his hip. Well, meanwhile, I went and looked on, did I give the wrong phone number? April, I just saw your email. Did I put the wrong phone number in my email earlier?
Yes.
You put down the wrong code.
You put the right
yeah.
number, you put the wrong code. You put a 738.
Eek. Okay, maybe that's why so few people are here, but thank you for that. So that went out to everyone in the group?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you for that. Sorry about that. All right, so anyway. Hey. Did you just get here, Jason?
I had dialed the wrong code number in. I'm like, something's off.
All right. Hey, Jason, you at your computer?
Not yet. I'm in my car on the way home.
Okay. April, are you at your computer?
Yeah.
Okay, just send another one, if you don't mind, just to the group.
Sure.
Just,
sure.
You know, Phil screwed up for the first time ever. Maybe the third. All right, anyway, so I go on Facebook, and I find out quite a bit about this kid. He's 20 years old. He's a barber. He just graduated barber school and loves motorcycles. His whole Facebook page is filled with motorcycles, and he races in what are called suicide game races. And I guess the suicide game races are pretty much as fast as you can go. Okay, so here you have two characters in this real-life play. You have the 20-year-old who rides in suicide races, and you have the 79-year-old woman who's never had an accident in her life, very conscientious, and there's an accident. So he is suing my mother for $1 million. He had to have his hip it was displaced, and they had to put it back in place. So replaced, put back in place. He got $250,000 from my mom's insurance company, and now he's suing my mother personally for $1 million. All right. Now, this morning was the deposition. So I took my mom because she was very shaken, and they didn't let me stay in for the deposition, but they asked her questions. And the truth is, everything I just told you, she was going less than 1 mile an hour. He came barreling down the road. He's a guy who likes to ride fast. I mean, even if she hit him at that speed, he wouldn't go flying off the bike. So, but this is the way it's going. He's suing my mother. So I think about this thing, justice. I think about it. Everybody in that deposition knows this is a kid who's getting advised by people going, hey, you can make a fortune. You'll never have to work. I mean, he's a barber. He's going, this accident ruined his career. Huh? But this is sort of the game, you know, and oh, the insurance company will pay it anyway. So I'm sharing that only because I've been thinking about this idea of justice. I'm at the courthouse and thinking about justice. We don't live in a society of justice. I'm telling you, we don't. That's not to say that justice doesn't happen at times. But sometimes bad things happen to good people. Sometimes people get away with stuff. Sometimes you're wronged. And there's no retrieving whatever you lost. That's just truth. So if you think in terms of this word, justice, what is just? We could think of this in a perspective of how should you be respected in your profession? What is just? How should you be compensated in your profession? What is just? And think about that, because just know that justice isn't always in play. It is very possible to go through the entirety of a career being underpaid. That's unjust. There are other people who will be way overpaid. It's not just. So what is a metaphor for justice? What do you think of? What can you use as a metaphor for justice? Anything come to mind? Anything. Anything at all. I mean, in the old Westerns, it might be a gun, right? So what would be a metaphor
Ranger
for justice?
Superman.
Okay, a superhero. What else?
Come to me as you reap what you sow.
Okay. Good. How about a visual, like an image?
The balance of justice is blind. The blindfolded lady of justice.
Okay, so you have a blindfolded lady, and we talk about the balance, so you're talking about a scale, right?
Right.
So if you're trying to make this point to somebody about justice, which do you think would be more acceptable? Let's say you're giving a talk to all of the clients you've ever had about justice. And you have a choice for your PowerPoint presentation. It's either going to be a scale or a sword. Which would you choose? The blind lady with the scale of justice or a sword?
The scale.
Why? Isn't a sword stronger?
It could scare people. Be too intimidating, too intense.
So we really would rather kind of soften the blow than run the risk of scaring people, right? All of this is opinion. I mean, there's no right or wrong. So, you know, stand your stance here. I mean, yeah, you don't want to use a sword because you're going to scare people. Do you think there are other people in other fields who, if they were to do a presentation on justice, they might use the image of a gun or a sword? That they'd be okay with scaring people?
Yes.
Okay. So just remember that for now. And for now, let's just kind of put our kinesiology hats on. You didn't know you had a kinesiology hat, but you do, so put it on. And I'm going to make a statement. It seems to me that if I really didn't live in this world, but I simply studied the books of anatomy and the way the body works, it would seem to me that walking is not possible. I'm going to tell you why I say that. My daughter is an equestrian, loves horses, and here in the house she has this very impressive toy stable, you know, barn. And so it's like a whole little ranch, and she's got all these horses, and there are these riders of the horses. So you take the rider, and you sit the rider on the horse, and they could kind of bend from the hip, and you could bend them forward and bend them back. But if I take this rider, I'm actually holding one right now, if I take this rider, that is, you know, a human being drawn to scale, and I try to stand it, it flops. Now, I can try and try and try. It's going to flop because the shape of this human body, this shape, is not really mechanically something that should stand. It could lay on its back. It could lay on its front. It can't stand. Now, if we say stand on one leg, that would be even worse. Like if I was able to remove one of these legs, this thing would just topple. And now we talk about walking. How is this possible when the figure itself is not even able to stand? The mechanics of the human body do not lend to this thing standing by itself. Walking or standing on one leg should theoretically be impossible because when I have a scale model of it, it cannot. Now, if I was going to make a scale model that I wanted to stand, I could do it. I could kind of make the feet flatter, or I could make some kind of little stand or lean something. But looking at this actual replica of a human body, it just doesn't stand. So what makes the impossible possible? I mean, lots of people stand and lots of people walk. How could that be? If I take the horse figure, it stands because it has four legs. But this human just has two and just flops right over. If I take a Rubik's Cube and I put it here, it'll stand. If I take a water bottle, it'll stand. The human can't stand. How does it happen?
The interaction of the muscles with the skeletal system.
Right. The interaction of the muscles with the skeletal system. So what do the muscles allow the skeletal system to do? You have agonists, you have antagonists, you have stabilizers. What do they allow the skeletal system to do?
To stabilize itself.
Because we have the ability to
contract and relax muscles. And,
but why don't we fall forward? Why don't we tip to the side? Because we have the ability to do what?
Balance ourselves.
To balance, right? To balance. We think about the scale of justice. We think about balance. We think about the human body. We think about balance. And when I say we think about, we don't normally think about these things. We don't. But I'm asking you to. I'm asking you to think about this concept of balance. The people in this group balance. I don't mean just when you walk and stand, but you're balancing two ends of a spectrum, which we've spoken about before, and one end of the spectrum is ambition. You all have ambition, or you wouldn't be here. You would just get a job where you get paid a paycheck every week. You wouldn't be working as hard as you do. So you all have ambition. If we take ambition and we feed it arrogance and arrogance and arrogance and arrogance and more arrogance, then the scale tips in one direction. So we balance it with something else. We balance it with humility. So we have arrogance and ambition on one side, humility and ambition on the other side. It's sort of like on one side you have the sword that would scare people, and on the other side you have the less threatening imagery. And the people in this group, and I know you well, lean more toward humility. Would you guys agree with that? I say you lean more toward humility. Ambition coexists with humility more than ambition coexists with arrogance.
That's true.
But there are people who will stand with the sword and say, I'm the best and I'll destroy anything that gets in my way. That's not you guys, but you know people like that, right? So I'm suggesting that in order to find the balance of justice, you've got to go more toward the sword. Understand what I'm saying. If you stay with the way you're operating, you will not find your just reward. You will find peace at some level because you're going to go, I've never been arrogant. I'm just humble. It isn't me. I'm just the teacher. They do it themselves. And all of that is nice. But why aren't you making the kind of money we talk about? When I spoke about $2 million in a year, I know some of you were sort of shocked that I'm throwing that number out there, but I hope you've gotten some kind of sense of, hey, this could be real. And if not 2 million, at least 1 million. Because it can be real, and it can be real for all of you. But you've got to move along the line. You can't stay so enmeshed or so entwined on that side of, I don't want to upset anybody, I don't want to anger anybody, don't misunderstand me, I don't want you to get arrogant. I just want you to understand, I said to Tasso at the beginning of the call, the thing that held you back from getting to this point where you're running a $1,700 program is still there. So you've made some progress, but you're still far from balance. So when I ask you to go through this process that I'm suggesting will take 16 hours, and you're going to confront the question of what do you really want, I'm not asking you to be arrogant. I'm just asking you to be less humble. Because this is not about humility. This is about desire. I'm not asking you to temper yourself. I'm asking you to get in touch with whatever is in you in terms of your true want. I'm not asking you to judge it. I'm just telling you, release the humility, at least for the sake of going through this exercise. Because the question that has to follow, what do you really want, once you get to some sort of answer, is this. How can you do that on the largest scale possible? Again, it doesn't mean I'm asking you to be Superman. I'm just asking you to realize what you're capable of. So if you connect with this idea of what you really want, and again, it's a question that we've built up some layers over, and we've got to move those layers out of the way, and it's going to be different for all of you. What do you really want? And when you say get people fit, that's a tiny, tiny, tiny piece of it. What do you really want? And then we follow it with how can you do that on the largest scale possible? What you're really asking yourself is, what is your potential? And that's a good thing. That's not arrogant. But I think there's an aversion toward that large scale thinking that comes with your imbalance. I know people who think huge. And I told you, I know people who sell nothing and make a ton of money. You guys have such substance. So when we talk about balance, when we talk about justice, let's find the reward. And isn't the value in the millions? Isn't the value of what you can do for people, if we really consider for you the largest scale possible, isn't the value in the millions? Tammy, is it?
Definitely.
Definitely, right? If we look at what you do, because you love to do and you have a desire to do it, we look at what you do for people, and we answer the question, how can you take this and do it on the largest scale possible? $1 million is really a conservative number when you think about what that's worth. But how do we get the Tammy that's been so stuck? And this is not an affront upon Tammy. This is just our industry and what it has done and where it has set our limits. And I'm saying those limits are not real. They were imposed upon you, but you've been with them for so long that in order to get to your true potential, it's almost a dissection of who you are and then a rebuilding of it. And that's what I'm suggesting. So what do you really want? And how can you do that on the largest scale possible? And understand, this is not for ego. And this is why I think it would help to have a coach. Because it's not, I, Tammy, am great. You may be, but that's not what this is about. This has almost nothing to do with your ego. Really what this is about is to maximize your impact, your sense of fulfillment, and what we might call your purpose, because that's your desire. The fulfillment of your desire is bigger than your ego. You just got to get your stupid ego out of the way. From a business perspective, you know, and when I say you, I mean everybody here. April, you know, it's possible to earn over $1 million a year in the field you're in. Now, there are voices in your head that go, no, it's not. He doesn't know you. He thinks you're worth more than you really are. And we all have those voices of doubt. But when you move the voices away and you just go, from a business perspective, is this possible? The only answer is yes. So when I say $1 million a year, maybe at this point some of you can lock in on it. You know, I believe Jason can. I believe Jim can. I believe Tasso can. I believe the rest of you are getting closer to it. Maybe some of you can even now lock in on this concept of $2 million a year. So the question becomes, what prevents you? And as I said at the beginning, it's the same thing that prevented Tasso from doing what he knows now he was capable of a year ago, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, charging $1,700 for a program. Jason, you too, $1,800 for a program. You know you're capable of it because you're doing it. So what was the thing, and don't answer me, but this is what we have to identify. What was the thing that prevented you from doing it 2 years ago? Because you could have. There's no question that you could have. So what prevents you now? And if you're going to go, well, back then I didn't see, okay, well, what is it that you don't see now? Let's figure out what that blockage is so we can get past it. Does anybody know kudzu? Anybody know what kudzu is? No? Give me a no if you don't. Just something. Anybody know what kudzu is?
No.
That's not the Japanese thing of continual improvement, is it?
No. No. The Toyota. No. Kudzu, I used to date a girl in Atlanta years ago, and the first night I stayed over her apartment, it was like, middle of the night, and I got up, and it was really hot in the apartment, and it was really nice outside. So I got up, and I opened the window, and she jumps up, and she goes, "Don't open the window." And I said, "Why?" And she goes, "Kudzu will come in." And I said, "Oh." And I just went back to sleep. But kudzu, I'm thinking, what is it? Is it a cat? Is it like a boogeyman? Like, kudzu will come in. You know, what is kudzu? So, of course, I asked. Kudzu, this is true. Kudzu is a vine that has literally taken over Atlanta and parts of southern Georgia. And it came from Japan. And some Japanese artists brought it to a gardening show, and they created this whole thing with the kudzu vine. And they liked it, so people in the southern U.S. started putting kudzu in their gardens. And this kudzu would grow literally 18 inches overnight. So these vines were all over the wall of the apartment complex, and if you left your window open, by the morning you would have these vines in your house, and they'd have to like call maintenance to cut the vines. So, and you could look this up. This is true. But you got to wonder, why didn't that happen in Japan? Like, why did it take over in this way? And it's also damaging some of the natural flora that was native to southern Georgia. Why? Why does it happen here and not in Japan? Well, here's the answer. Because in Japan, there are over 100 insects that eat it. And here, there are zero. And you think about that. Tasso, are you aware of the algae that's taken over the beaches?
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
It's south of you and north of...
I was thinking the lionfish when you were telling the story.
Or the pythons in the Everglades, right?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
The blue-green algae that is now destroying many of the vacations of people coming to South Florida in the summer. This algae is now in salt water. It's not supposed to be in salt water. So what all of this comes down to is there's an amazing balance in nature. Really, you just have to, whatever you believe, you've got to acknowledge homeostasis in the body is a miracle. But when we take a step back and we look at our planet, this is just amazing shit. I mean, you know, the vine is beautiful in Japan. You're not supposed to bring it over here. And you do it, it messes with something. And when the wrong mosquitoes get over here, we have a problem. And when you bring the wrong animals over and you try to control some population, something else suffers. This concept of balance is really all the way through nature what sustains life. When we work with people, we want to sustain the balance between stress, load, and recovery. I maintain that is the one thing that people aren't learning, and maybe the most important thing once they've started moving along the disease continuum is to restore balance. When people go with symptoms to the doctor and they're giving medication, they're out of hormonal balance. Balance becomes the most important thing we can do. So I'm suggesting that you need to find the balance between what you're capable of and what you do. The balance between what you do and what reward comes to you, because you haven't come close. You have not come close. Now, you could really be okay with that. You can go, I never want to hear Phil talk about this again because it offends me. I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I don't want you to be unhappy. But if you're not in a place that you go, I'm thrilled with my reward, then I want you to take a very honest look at this, because this is what I'm asking. I'm asking you to get in touch with nature. Your desire needs to be balanced with reward. That is the way it's supposed to be. There's something blocking it. There's something creating an imbalance. So before I use the metaphor of a sword, Let's say you carry a sword. Let's just say you metaphorically carry a sword. So when Tony's partner, Tony had a business partner in that charity that they were working together for. His partner started to cause some waves. Tony drew his sword. I mean, he was then ready to fight because it's justice time, right? Now there's somebody who's doing something that is unjust, and I need to defend myself. He drew his sword. When Tasso was getting disrespected by the people who kept telling him they're buying his building, he drew his sword. When Tammy got fed up with Franco finally, she drew her sword. So you have that ability. You have that ability to draw your sword and fight. The question becomes, how far will that take you? Because if you have the ability to draw that sword when you are disrespected, how much fight is in there? When do you rely upon that sword? And if you can really gain some respect for what I'm saying and say, this is not justice. I am not being respected and compensated as I deserve to be. It's nobody's fault but mine because I haven't fought the fight hard enough. I haven't stood my ground enough. Do you have it in you to kind of draw the sword and fight that fight? Or no, because of what Jason said? No, because it'll scare people. We'll put the scale out there. That doesn't scare anybody. But the sword, you know, the fight, the stepping forward and coming across as if there's some arrogance. No, 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 no. That'll offend people. That'll scare people. So we don't go. We just stay where we are. What do you think of that? Can anybody either understand or receive what I'm saying or maybe challenge it? Maybe go, no, Phil, you're way off base here. I mean, I do stand my ground. I do defend my value. I do. It's just this is how things are. I'm suggesting you have a greater ability to earn what you deserve than you have called upon. Do you agree with that or not?
I agree, and I almost, this sort of sounds weird, Phil, but I almost see this playing out in this whole Republican primary stuff. You know, most of us will admit that Trump is very arrogant. He needed to be arrogant to accomplish what he's done. And you know, he feels that his just reward is to be the nominee and the president. And you see it playing out. Almost what you're saying now is he's got his sword drawn. He's not coming with balance. And there's people that admire him for that and place value in him as a result of it. And I'm also receiving that, you know, whatever that plan is called, we have the plant growing, but we got too many of the bugs still here. We got to put it in an environment where the bugs are gone so we can grow 18 inches overnight.
Good. Good. And by the way, I love that you just went to Trump because that's the perfect metaphor. Tammy, what do you think? I want to get a little pulse because I want to know if I'm offending anybody. That's not my intention. I want to know if you're kind of connecting with what I'm saying here.
Yes, totally.
Jason?
1,000%.
So, okay. So let's now call this an agreed upon fact. Everyone here is too far on the humility side. That doesn't mean don't be humble. I want you to be humble. We should all be very humble. You know, I mentioned one more thing just from my own life experience is there was a time that 5 days a week I was on a stage. I was literally traveling city to city, country to country, on a stage or on TV or on a radio show. And I can promise you this. It wasn't about me. Now, people who don't know me well may disagree. Maybe some people who know me well may disagree. But I'm telling you from the inside here, it wasn't about me. I never set out to be on the stage. What I did set out was to influence people. That was always important to me, influencing people, always. I mean, way, way, way back. I can give you examples. So when I'm asking you to find that desire and know that it was there in your childhood, you know, I find that. That's me. It's in there, a desire to influence people, a desire to help people. This is really deep in me. So when I'm on a stage, I feel a responsibility. And if I throw in things that are entertaining, if I put in music, it's not for me. I promise it's not for me, but this was difficult, and I realize this in hindsight. is people would come up to me sometimes, and you know, when I used to do my personal trainer business forum, the first night was a Thursday, and the Thursday we'd have 1,200 people in the room, of which 1,000 of them were just consumers, because I wanted the trainers to see what I do, because I wanted to teach them to do it. And then the weekend would go on, and it would only be the 200 trainers. And they would always come up, and they go, I want to do what you do. I want to do what you do. How do I do what you do? And really what they'd say is, I want to be on the stage. And what I used to try to say to them is, if you want to do what I do, make a ton of mistakes. Keep getting back on your feet. Help people to the best of your ability. Study, question, be ethical, show up on time. You know, that's what I do. But they were just seeing me as on the stage, and they'd look at that and they'd go, oh, I want to do that. And the truth is, when I saw other people now, we're going to do our business for them, and I stopped doing it. I said, it's not about that. I don't want to be in a – it's not about the forum. It's about the ability to help people. And I think all you guys share that, that really that's what the juice is. But with that juice, we deserve to be paid. So that's why I'm saying if we're too humble because we fear what people will think, we'll hold ourselves back. I'll tell you, many people probably believe. Phil Catlin is extremely arrogant. All right, let him believe it. It didn't make me tiptoe because I didn't want that belief. As long as I know that I'm giving this my best shot at influencing and helping people, then I'm going to sleep well at night. So with that in mind, Tony's Monday motivation that he does on Facebook should be received by 10,000 people. Tasso, when you do your talks now, they should be in a theater. They should be in an arena. Tammy, you should be doing food and cooking demos like Rachel Ray. Jason, at the very least, you should be known throughout Akron as a guy who's able to change people's lives. Patrick, where do I go with Patrick? I mean, he has an ability to be on stage with Paul Stanley, but somehow misses bringing that to his true life. It's kind of this fantasy of the rock star trainer. He's capable of really being that. So this becomes a matter of turning the fantasy into something real. Jim is not on the call. I know he's going to listen to the recording. He's on vacation with his family. But Jim, I'm going to say to you, you've won the mention of the best in your part of Philly. You should be recognized as the best in Philly. I know Diane wanted to be recognized as the face of wellness in Colorado. She should be that. I'm very proud. She's doing many things, you know, putting her face out there and doing talks and at aging conferences. Beautiful. But I just think when you start to look at your true potential, when you go, what is it that I desire, and how can I get the maximum? How can I take this thing that I have and really do it in a way that it hits its peak? It is massive. Coach Terry should be renowned in his age group. He should be an icon. April should be viewed as a down-to-earth connector. She should have a presence in person on the internet, a laughing yoga inspirational mini Deepak Chopra. So, and I can keep going, but the question now with all of this, if you believe what I'm saying, is what limits you? What limits you? What puts that fear of drawing the sword in you? What reassures you that you just gave it your best effort when the truth is you didn't even come close? What is it? Is it insecurity? Is it fear? Is it competition? Is it negative talk? What is it? You don't have to answer it, but I'm going to give you a metaphor. I want you to take whatever it is that has limited you and turn it into smoke. Dark, gray, even blackish smoke. Everything under the smoke you know you can do. But then there's that smoke. And you don't consciously know it's there. But subconsciously, it's telling you it is a ceiling. Subconsciously, this black smoke is somewhere up above you at a certain height, And you know you can go up to that height. 8 people paying $1,700, 6-week program. Now, you know you can do that. It's under the smoke now. The smoke moved up a little bit. But can you charge $6,000 for a person? Can you? I know you can. But somewhere between that $1,700 for people in a group and $6,000 per person is smoke. And that's what's limiting you. It is smoke. So let's go back to the familiar metaphor of the escalator as creative tension. Remember I talked about walking up the down escalator, because if you don't walk, it's entropy. It's bringing you down. So you're walking up the down escalator, and at the top of the escalator is your outcome. That's where you want to get to. That's your creative tension. But now let's imagine you can't see the top because there's smoke. So you look and you assume that the smoke is the top of the escalator. But what if it isn't? What if that smoke is simply hiding a continuation of that escalator? What if you could get through that stupid smoke, you would find that it is miles longer than you thought it was? It appears to go on and on and on and on. Can you see your future that way? Because if you can, this 16-hour investment will change everything for you. If not, if you're going, I'm not seeing it. I mean, look, I try. I put out my best energy. I work harder than anybody I know. I don't disappoint a client. There is no way that my future can really be that high. I'm doing it. I'm living it. I'm happy. My family, people are saying thank you. I have money in the bank. It's good. If you're there, just know this. It's because of your stuck wiring. It's because of your instinct to stay in that safe space that your EEM allows you. It's a safe space where humility isn't overshadowed by arrogance. You feel okay with it. It's because of your stuck wiring and your instinct to only draw that sword when you're provoked. So you've got the smoke. It is the thing. It is the metaphor for the thing that has held you back. I'm going to give you two strategies. One strategy is just stay in the safe space. Don't go up to the smoke. Just stay in your safe space. That's the strategy you've been following. That's a strategy. I'm just going to go as high as the smoke allows me to. The second is to draw your sword. Just draw your sword. Go full on. But there's a problem. Both of those strategies are doomed to fail you. Both. You will fail to get true fulfillment if you stay in your safe space. Can you do it? Yes. Can you be okay there? Yes. Can you earn a living? Yes. Will you feel the maximum fulfillment? No. But it's certainly an option. So why, after all of this, am I saying if you draw your sword and fight the fight, that will fail you too? Because you can't fight smoke with a sword. You can't fight smoke with a sword. You need a different strategy. So know that what we're talking about here is something different than you've tried before. This is not just self-motivation. This is not just affirmations to say, I'm going to fight. I'm going to be my best. I'm going to do it. I'm going to draw my sword, because you can't fight smoke with a sword. So how do you get rid of smoke? How do you get rid of smoke? What if you come into a room and the room is filled with smoke? How do you get rid of smoke?
Open windows and turn on fans.
Why? What's happening to the smoke?
You move the smoke out of the way.
But there's really no such thing as empty space, is there?
No.
So what has to happen for the smoke to leave the room?
Fill it with
something. Fresh air has come in.
Yeah, something else has to take its place. So this is what I'm talking about. This is the alchemical change. This is the breaking apart. It is the replacing it with somebody else. It's not being the same person you've always been. It's being a better version of it. It's approaching this without the limitation. It's stepping away from it for 16 hours and coming back different. Coming back knowing what you can really, really do. Because I know, intellectually, you know that what you could do is greater than what you've done, but you're stuck because of smoke. And your sword can't get rid of the smoke, and staying under the smoke will not get you anywhere. So there's one option. Replace it with something else. Come back as something different. Restructure your intention, your action, and your outcome. Remember I said your business is a combination of the intention that you came with, what you put into it mechanically, and what it radiates, both in energy and reward. So the idea is to devote energy into breaking it into those three parts and then putting them back together so the smoke is just replaced with something else. It's a whole new world on top of that escalator. Now, I know I'm speaking metaphorically, but I hope you're getting the metaphor. Because if I just say to you, you're capable of more, you're capable of more, you're capable of more, it's like you saying to the overweight person, you can lose weight, you can lose weight, you can lose weight, they're stuck. So I want you to really connect with this metaphor of the escalator being almost endless, and the only reason you saw a top was because there was smoke. And you can't fight the smoke with your sword, which is good. It means you don't have to go to battle. You don't have to grit your teeth. You just have to be something better. And you're capable of it. So it starts with this. What is your intention? It can't just be to help people or to help people get fit. It can't be that. It has to run deep. It has to run into your heart. It has to run into your innate purpose, into that which might have been buried. If you realize now that your business is shaped by your intention, if you realize that the painting on the canvas is determined by the intention of the painter, it's a blank canvas, and the painter looks at that blank canvas and approaches it with an intention, that initiates the creation. Mastery of any sport is initiated by the intention of the athlete. So what is the intention of your business? And although it sounds like such a simple question, you need freedom from the rituals and the habits of your life to get to that answer. What is your intention? To build the business now, to build it better, to build it free of smoke. What is your intention? I really doubt, and I could be wrong, that when you really get into this and really examine it, that any of you will come back and go, my intention is to personal train people. You may prove me wrong, but I think there's a much deeper intention. That doesn't mean you're not going to train people, because remember, the part two is going to be the mechanics. You know, how do you do it? But let's start with the purity of the intention. What do you want to do? If your intention is to create the world's best ice cream to make little children happy all around the world, right? That's your intention. You go, look, ever since I was a child, I wanted to make children happy. Now that I'm adult, I love making children happy. And I really have a love for ice cream, and my intention is to build a business that will create the world's best ice cream so I can make little children happy around the world. If that is your intention, clearly you'd have a bold ambition, right? Around the world, that's a bold ambition. You would have a clear intention. You're going to make children happy through ice cream, and not just ice cream, the world's best ice cream. And if you set out to do this and you measure the outcome by the number of gallons of ice cream sold and the pictures of happy children, you say to all your customers, I want you to send me pictures, send them on the internet, send them by text, send them in a mail, send them any way you can, more and more pictures of happy children eating our ice cream. If those are the metrics, if that's the measure, you measure the outcome by gallons sold and pictures of happy children sent to your home office, you're meeting your intention. But the question is, does it change? Does it change if your intention was to create the world's best and healthiest ice cream? So what I'm suggesting is, if this were really the intention of somebody to create the world's best and healthiest ice cream, and they get those metrics, they get millions of gallons sold, and they get millions of pictures of happy children, But all of these children wind up with diabetes. Clearly they failed. So that's why it really starts with the purity of the intention. What if your intention was to add serotonin drivers to children's vitamins? You say, I want happy children. Other people will do ice cream. Ice cream's not my thing. My thing is children's vitamins. I want to add serotonin drivers so when the children take their vitamins, they feel good. And my intention is to provide an alternative to dangerous medications so that children can have fun again. Would your outcome be different than if your intention was to make $20 billion selling serotonin enhancers? Of course it would. So you might embark upon the same path, but it is the intention that determines how successful the business becomes or how far it goes. So before you get into anything related to change, you've got to discuss this first question, and I hope with your coach. What is the intention of your business? This is not a sentence. It's only when you really start to dig deep and explore this that you're going to find some answers. And I'm going to say, at minimum, you need to invest an hour, because every answer you come up with, you'll be able to dig into. Some of them, what you say at first, you'll throw away because you realize that's not really it. You'll think about, you know, Tasso said earlier, a superhero would be a sort of metaphor for justice. What does the word hero mean to you? And is that important? Because most of us will connect with that. Whatever the word hero means to you, you want to be that at some level. That doesn't mean that you're going to just rescue people all the time, but it might. What does the word hero mean to you? Maybe a hero is somebody who donates money to causes to change people's lives. And when you figure that out, what does the word hero mean to you? It ties right back to your intention. Is that important? And how can you either be a real-life hero or feel as if you're a real-life hero? So I'm telling you, this is 1 hour of discussion. This is so far removed from the step-by-step stuff that we've done in the past. This is very far removed from just understanding your business at the reach, the funnel, the spillover. This is digging into the creation of your business moving forward, of the source of your prosperity. Based on this, give me some honesty here. Are you hearing this and going, I don't want to get this honest. I don't want to go this deep. I don't want to dig into emotions and shit. I don't want to dig this up. Or are you going, yeah, I think I really want to do this thing, and I'm willing to do it with a partner? Because tell me where you're at. This is a risk for me, guys, because I'm telling you, this is what I do with people. And doing it with you is a risk, because you're all coming from a paradigm of being personal trainers. You're not just people who came to me and said, you know, I want my life to be more fulfilling. So what I'm doing is marrying those two, and I want to make sure that I'm not alienating you in the process. I mean, my intentions are good here. But you got to let me know, are you hearing this and going, you're way over my comfort level, bro. I'm not going there. Or are you enticed by this because I'm telling you it's real?
I'm definitely enticed still because definitely feeling all the things that we've learned and done with the 11 and all that stuff. I still feel that, to your point, my thought habits, where I came from as a $10 an hour training, like that stuff still resonates with me, even though I know better, even though I don't want it to be. I agree. I need to change. Something's holding me back. I'm at a ceiling. I see where I want to go. Don't know how to get there. So I really resonate with this. I already talked to Tony. Him and I are going to do this together. I'm fully committed to this thing. I really resonate with what you're saying. It really makes sense to me. Because I 1,000% believe there's something better out there. I just at times I have no idea how to do it.
Then, Jason, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Spend 1 hour each. In other words, if you're going to work with Tony and Tony's going to work with you, and it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it might be Tony works with you and then you coach someone else. But if you guys are going to kind of do it for each other, it takes a real discipline. And you've got to kind of say, this hour is Tony coaching me. And then, you know, you kind of close, hang up the phone or whatever you do. And then there's a separate hour where you coach Tony. But literally 1 hour devoted to what I'm talking about now. What is the intention? And I'm telling you, this is how it's going to start. Tony's going to go, okay, Jason, so what's your intention? And you're going to go to help people. And then it's going to be kind of a silence. Nobody's going to know what to say. But I'm promising you, if you stay with it and you start to ask some of the questions I'm giving you here, like what does the word hero mean to you? Why is that important? Is it important? Maybe you're going to say no. But most cases, it's going to be yeah. So how can you be a hero? And how does that tie in with your intention? And what can you look back in your childhood and find that relates to what you want to do now?
Sure.
And what you have to avoid, you got to call each other on this, is making it sound like goal speak. Do you know what I mean by that? Making it sound like the generic kind of goal setting exercise.
Yeah.
You know, it can't just be like a series of affirmations. This is really getting to the core of who you are. Because when you connect that true passion with what you do, there's no stopping you. There's no smoke. That passion is what moves that smoke out of the way. The question beyond that within this hour is who needs it? Who needs what you're offering? In other words, you have an intention. I've spoken to people in this field or in the health field, and their intention is to prevent people from getting sick. More specifically, to prevent parents from getting sick. Why? Because they grew up with sick parents. And when that starts to come out, it changes the dynamic of the passion. What was wrong with the parents? Cholesterol, diabetes, heart disease. So now this idea of changing the world by helping parents repair their lost health so that the children have healthy parents, man, that's strong. But that doesn't come out in goal speak. I want to have 6 facilities by 2017. You know, that's what I mean by goal speak. I'm looking for what's in you, and it doesn't have to be exactly what I said. It's some part of you, and some of it is nature, and some of it is nurture. Some of this desire, you literally arrived here with it. Some of it was shaped by your experience. You've got to make it genuine, and you've got to make it genuine where it touches you, where something rises up, where you get a different sense of possibility. This is in you. The amazing thing is you're containing this right now. This is not something you're going to go externally and find. This is not you getting on the internet and searching what other people say. This is all within you, but that's what the exercise is you guys really coaching this out of each other. So, Jason, does this sound doable for you?
Yeah, it does. I feel like over the special last year, I've stumbled across this passion of like this, like you're, what you're describing, but then I come back down again. Like I go through this circle, like, all right, here we go. You know, it all's working. I think I turn around, I'm at the same freaking spot that I've always been. I'm like, all right, what am I missing? So the up and down of having one day being super confident, I can conquer the world, and then the next week I'm, you know, what am I doing? I'm, you know, this is stupid. I'm not working. You know, all that bull crap I go through, I recognize and I get, and I've always loved looking at the behavior side of things, especially within myself. So I'm very comfortable dissecting, quote unquote, my brain in this sense and how I do things. So I'm very comfortable with it. It's going to be challenging, I know, but I'm this feeling I'm dealing with, I want to break through, and it's got to change for me.
Good. And Jason, you know what? You're going to get uncomfortable, and I mean it in a positive way. And the reason you're going to get uncomfortable is because this is not the brain. This is the heart. This is not the behavior. This is what drives the behavior. This is deeper. And I'm telling you this, it's in there, but if you're a guy who deals with the brain, you're probably not the guy who goes very often into the heart. And I use the heart as a metaphor. You're not physically doing heart surgery, but it is the inner desire that drives the behavior. So if you look at the behaviors, you tend to go, I'm rigid. You know, you come up with all these things of what your behaviors are. The question is, who are you under that? And I'm telling you something, when you touch it, it changes everything. It really does. You start to get a sense of things being limitless. Because the behaviors go away. You're going to create different behaviors based on what you get in touch with. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, Tasso, what about you? How are you receiving this? Are you kind of going, hey, Phil, I'm way past this point. If I was 35 years old, I would have done it, but I'm not going to dig that deep right now. I raised kids.
No, I don't think I'm there at all. I think where I'm at, Phil, is actually, I don't know how to put this without, it's, okay, so, you know, when I first got with you, I just wanted to say how I saved my business. How do I bring my business back? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It evolved to seeing the vision and now being in a place where I realized that my business isn't about personal training for me anymore, although I'm doing that as part of my mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating careers, which if you go way, way back when I first started my business, I wanted to create a model that I had friends who were struggling in their fitness business. I wanted to make sure that I was someone that helped them to be successful and have a life,
mm-hmm.
and have a life and be more prosperous. And so I see that, but what I see beyond that is what it has taken me to now is, you know, we haven't talked in a while, but, you know, we have this ongoing negotiation to buy the building, but because of the speeches I've been giving, you know, I now have more physician clients I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I have three physicians approaching me about renting space in my building, so I'm going like, hold on. We have a vision of an epicenter, that we're the epicenter of people's health and fitness and wellness. We can have it right here physically in this building.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to be the lead trainer of that. I want to be the architect of that. I want to be the architect that changes the health of the community, which then makes me that hero to the community. It makes me that hero to my friends that will model what I've done. It makes me feel good because I know what I've done is more than, hey, what's your calories in and calories out. I've significantly changed the practice of my profession to not just my community, but to my sphere of influence as well.
Tasso, this is really good. Because you identified the hero part of you. You wanted to help all these people who are struggling with their fitness business, right?
Yes.
And you're almost like naive Superman. Like if we could create a character, naive Superman. Like there's a cluster of women, and Superman just flies down in the middle. And he goes, I'm here to save you. And they go, we don't need to be saved. He goes, no, I'm going to save you. Come on, let me lift you up. And I go, no, we don't need to be saved. So there's the hero, but there's not the real need in terms of their desire. Like all these fitness people who would complain to you, for whatever reason, their smoke is really low. Do you know what I mean? They're not going, Tasso, come here, I really want to excel. You're just looking at them with a little bit of pity, and you're going, I want to help you guys. They're going, yeah, sure, if you want to help us. But they really don't.
But
merit.
I'm not at that point. I have that realization because I've experienced the same frustration you have, Phil. When I talk to my friends and I try to move them in a direction they don't, I say, well, fuck you. You know, it's like, if you don't want to listen to me, I don't care. But I want the ones that come to me and say, son of a bitch, Tasso, how have you done this? How have you done this? And I said, are you ready to rethink? You know, when I do my intake interview now with new employees, I say, you're going to need persistence, you're going to be open-mindedness, you're going to need humility, and you're going to need enthusiasm to go through what I'm going to put you through to be a trainer. And then in maybe 5 years, you'll be able to do this.
So you know? Going back to the questions that I suggested you guys will ask each other is, what does the word hero mean to you? Is that important? And then how can you either be a hero or feel as if a hero? But then the next question is, who needs what you're offering? And that's going to be pivotal for you is, who really needs it. And when you can really lock in on who needs it, man, you have so much to give. It just has to be directed properly. And then you have to be able to give it to that audience who needs it with complete and total unguarded giving, just everything you've got, because that's where it comes back to you. So it's tapping into whatever that desire was that made you want to help those people who really didn't need your help at that time. It needs to be better directed.
Yeah.
Who do you have somebody in mind that you can work with? It doesn't have to be someone in the group, although it can. But it's,
actually,
you know,
the guy that I'd really like to have as my coach, Phil,
mm-hmm.
is Joe Cerulli. Joe Cerulli or Jim Flanagan?
The only thing I would say is they've got to stay with the guidelines here, because if you're using somebody who is a coach, it's kind of like you could have an exercise program that works and another exercise program that works, but that doesn't mean that the hybrid works, right?
That's right, yeah.
So I think Joe would be very open to my stuff, because we've done a lot of things together. But just it can't be the integration of Napoleon Hill stuff.
Right, right. And that's you know, I sit there, and then some of the other guys, I think it was my coaches, you know, I have workout partners that know my intent. You know, they know who I am. You know, when I talk to them about this, they go, yeah, we'd be your coach if you'll fucking listen. And I go like, yeah, I know. I don't know if they completely get it. But, you know, going back a moment, I know exactly why I want to be the hero that I want to be. And that's because when I was five and my dad passed away, there were people in my life that expected nothing but gave a lot to me. You know, some of those people are still alive and I still have contact with them. Some have gone by and I say that's their legacy I need to pick up. And whether it's these eight or nine kids that I have here that are my trade outs, that's a way of me being a hero. And some of them have gone on to have careers as a result.
And Tasso, now here's another important piece. You have to hold on to these two things as well. Because, and I've shared this with you, when you are an altruist, you have this weakness. And that's why I'm putting in these two pieces. One is justice. You can give and give and give and give and give, but there has to be a just reward. There has to be. So this is how you get to the mechanics piece, is how do I now take this thing that I found in me, this desire to give and give and give and give, but how do I do it mechanically in a way that money comes to me in line with what I deserve? And the third piece, or the second piece, is your business has to be the source of your prosperity. So if you hold on to all of that, you get somewhere great. So just be careful that you don't go off too far in this altruist direction. I'm saying tap into what it is that will make you feel like a hero. But then, where's the need, and how do you meet that need in a way that is justified? That there is justice, that there is balance, that you're putting out, but you're receiving, that you're giving from your heart, but you're feeling fulfilled, and your business becomes the source of your prosperity, and that's perfection. When you bring that together, that's perfection. Tammy, April, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not sure who I would partner up with.
Can't do it with Billy. I mean,
No, I don't. I know that. I'm not. That's not even. No, I mean, I want to partner with somebody who, I don't know. I don't know if it's in the group. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, maybe it can Jim. Be somebody who used to be in the group. It can be a sister. It can be a friend. It can be somebody who inspires you. It doesn't have to be somebody in this group. Like, I don't want this to be locked in. We're partnering people up. I just want you to have a coach who's going to kind of force you to kind of stay that line for a total of 16 hours, you know, over whatever period of time. And I think, you know, worst case, I would block out four-hour segments if you can do that with somebody. Like, this shouldn't drag on for weeks and weeks and weeks, because then you're too distracted by stuff that's going on in your life. So, okay. So here's what I'm going to ask. By our next call, I want everybody to have completed this first hour, and we'll communicate on the board, and I'll put this out there. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of the beginnings of a form, but just know that when you connect with your coach, this is the first part of it, is you've got to get in touch with what is the intention. What is the intention of the business you're about to create? Don't think about what is. Don't burden yourself with the problems, the rent, the trainers you have now. Don't burden yourself with debt. Just ask the question, what is the intention of the business I'm going to create right now? What is the intention that rises up from within me that is going to form this creation? This creation that will become the source of my prosperity. This creation that will bring a sense of justice. That I will be able to look at what my business does and feel fulfilled. And then the questions that you will ask as you go through this are the questions related to a hero, the question related to who needs this, and then once you have this intention married to your true desire and a clarity to the need that you're meeting, then you're ready to begin this process. If you can't get to that point where your intention aligns with your desire, if you can't get to the point of clarity as to the need you're meeting, then everything else you do is going to be limited by your history. So this is sort of the clearing. This is a release. It's a clearing of the smoke. It is a replacing it with something else. It's the passion. It's the getting the smoke out of the room and out of your space and out of your vicinity and even off of your planet if you choose. And I'll tell you where we will go from there. Once you get really clear, you know, once you can say to people, to your wife, to Bob, you know, once you can go, I found it. I mean, this is the intention. This is what I'm building off of now. Once you can do it in a way that it has that contagiasm where they just look at you and they go, he's different. You know, he lit up. Something woke up in him. Something ignited. Once you can do that, I'm not taking you to the top of a mountain where you're just going to live in this fantasy. I'm not asking you to find nirvana. I'm just saying once you have that, now you build your business. And if you're going to build your business, there's something that we have to consider, and that is money. So when you get to that point, the next step is a gut sense of what you will earn in a given year. Now, don't do this first. I prepped you for it over the past few calls. But just know that once you've got this connection, and you'll know it when you hit it, once you've got it, you're going to sit down and say, what does my gut tell me is possible for me to earn in the year 2017? And put a number to it. A number that you see at the top of your escalator without any smoke. And this number will be changeable, but at the end of these 16 hours, it's going to be firm. Because don't forget, we're building a business. We're building a business in prime. We're taking every single thing covered in Be Better. We're building the perfect business for you, the greatest business in the world for you, because it is built on your intention. So don't get so caught up in this thing that you think you now have to go meditate and dig up your soul and your higher self. That's not what I'm asking. I'm just saying get all the smoke out of the way. And then we're going to take this new energy and infuse it. So don't leave the money thing off of the table. It's important. This is a part of the justice. So dig deep, get to that intention, answer these questions, find out what you want to build your business from. You're the painter standing before the canvas. What is your intention? And then a gut sense of what you'll earn in a given year. If you're not comfortable picking a number for 2017, pick it for 2018, not later than that. I don't want you to do it now. I don't want you to even think of a number anymore until you get your intention. And once you have that, once it's real, this becomes the outcome. This becomes the other end of your creative tension line. And then we figure out the mechanics, we figure out the reward, and you're different, and the smoke is gone. Any thoughts, comments, questions?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Good. Jason, I told you guys this is a risk for me because I'm going way off of, you know, the original agenda of Be Better is just to build a better fitness business. You know, what I'm feeling is you guys are capable of really, really, really being world changers. And whether or not you're recognized for it may not matter to you. It may not be a part of the intention. But I see the world. I see, look, I don't know how to stop what's going on in the Middle East. I don't know how to control ISIS. I don't know how to do any of those things. But I do know in a microcosm, I can take people who've moved along the disease continuum and move them back to health. I've proved it many times. So if I can share that with you so that you bring that forward in line with your intention, I believe everyone here can really be a world changer and feel fulfilled and feel heroic. But you've got to find it in you. So my question to you is, was this a worthwhile risk for me to kind of take it in this direction, Jason?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
Okay. Tasso, any final thoughts, ideas, questions, or Tammy or April?
I got
okay,
to
good.
Work. So
go
much
ahead.
Work.
What's that?
I said I got so much work to do.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you ever see getting to the place where you just don't have all that work to do? It doesn't mean you stop working. But, like, is there something validating for you about having work to do? In other words, do you see this as a means to an end, or is this the end? Is it just, you know, I have work to do and I'll always have work to do?
I think what true success is going to be for me is that I'm not going to have to work. I'm going to be the maitre d' of the business. I'm going to make my own schedule. I'll be truly working on the business. I don't see myself stopping to work because I enjoy what I do. But I do see myself, true success to me is going to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to fly to California and visit my daughter and not worry about what it costs and not worry about what clients don't get trained because my other trainers can take care of it.
Good. Okay. So, Tasso, let me know who you think you're going to work with. Just everybody, you know, post it on the board. And I know that, you know, Terry, you're going to be listening to the recording. Jim, you're going to be listening to the recording. Patrick, you're going to be listening to the recording. But still, just guys, you know, send that in so we could feel as a group that everybody's kind of locking in. And then I'll give you the whole outline of the 16 hours. And I think amazing things are going to come from this. I really, really, really do. In your lives and then collectively as a group. So until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.